Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. It's great to have some very dear friends and great musicians back on the show. It's long overdue, but it's well worth it. I want to introduce Incendio. They've been on several times. And I've watched this group grow over the years, and their newest album, Summoning the Muse, just came out, and it's one of the best things I've heard. What they're doing musically, arrangement-wise, orchestration-wise, besides the guitar playing, which is always fantastic, and the tones, the colors, the expansion of the instruments, and pushing the gambit in terms of style, not just staying in one place, but exploring other areas. I think this album is a very significant album. So JP, Jim Stubblefield, Tim Curl, and Lisa, and hiding in the corner, I put him in the corner because he's a bad guy, Ron Herbrand. But anyway, welcome. It's really an honor to have you guys back, and it's just always great to see you guys.
Thanks. Thank you. We're happy to be back.
It's good to have a private guard.
Yeah, I have to have a bodyguard. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, what I want to do is start out first the conception of this album. I want to kind of go through the steps from when you just started thinking about it, what the concept was, and then to the final completion. So
I think we would agree by probably the middle end of 2017, the three of us gave each other permission to really be melodic. The internal directive was to cut down on the solos, right? And all of us, everybody was coming at it from a different thing, but we gang tackled, like, that's what we want to do. Let's really concentrate on the melodies, make the solos maybe a little less shreddy and more melodic content, although we've always tried to have a lot of melodic content.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we all really wanted to have infectious grooves, things, because we do play a lot of festivals and we wanted to have things people could really dance to.
The original thought was to have just more of a dance and groove oriented thing and do that over the arc of the CD. But I think, you know, when things like Dog Mountain came up or Blue Bolero that lent themselves just so perfectly to the kind of treatment we wanted to do, you know, you never know where the writing's going to go, and so that's what happened.
But we gave ourselves permission to just write,
yeah,
and not try to stick within a certain genre that mm-hmm. we've done before, but to just write.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the only thing I would add is I think the challenge is because we all have other projects we're also involved in. Lise and JP have a duo. They write a lot of music for television and other things. And then between the last original Incendio album of original music and this, I did two solo albums. So, of course, I have 20 songs that I wrote that were on my solo stuff. So, you know, you start to, oh, my gosh, when we started discussing this, we need you to write some songs, Jim. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I better, you know, get some songs written. If I hadn't done those solo albums, of course, I would have had more material possibly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a challenge because we're involved with so many different projects at the same time. So, but I think we did have a directive where we definitely wanted to write music that I think we always want to, you know, be a little different, release to release, you know, and not keep doing the same album over and over again. I mean, it's 20 years this year. The band decided to become a band in August of 99.
Wow, 20
so,
years.
So it'll be 20 years in August that we decided to be a band. So 20 years later, I think we're like, okay, let's make this release sound different than Mysterioso, which came out in 2000. And I think it does sound different than Mysterioso. And I still love that album. So,
and I would also add that the fact that we've had Tim now in the band for a number of years, and it's also a very groove-oriented color. We're going to talk about a little bit about his contribution, the drum grooves, and all that. But that also sparked going in a different direction. So we're like, okay, we'll write this stuff, and I think that the suppleness of the grooves that he has, we knew were going to work really, really well with this batch of songs, and that ended up being the case. So that is, you know, a considerable element as well. All of that coming together in mid to late 2017.
And really, since the beginning, we have always experimented with loops and electronics and not just being an acoustic band, but experimenting with different colors. And we just, you know, really gave ourselves permission to just go for that. We did it a lot in Illumination, but we really did it for this one.
And one very, also very conscious thing is we become friends with so many guys in this genre, whether they happen to be Luis Villegas or Ben Woods or Johannes Lindstedt or all, you know, all these. It's really become a nice circle of people. Those guys, a lot of them really have like finger style and kind of flamenco and strummy chops, and that is something that this band has, it's never been the centerpiece of the writing for this. Are the people that we call on are as much Steely Dan or Rush or, you know, it bringing in a whole pop element, for better or worse. You know, I'm not saying we're better or worse than any of those people. I love the writing of a lot of the different people in this genre. Like Jesse Cook. Jesse Cook has a little bit of that pop thing, too, that he has infused in his writing more so than some of the other guys out there. And so I think we really like, that's really where we want to go. I love the fact that people might consider that our stuff is as dense or as considered in the arrangements as somebody like a Steely Dan or Joni Mitchell.
Well, that's what I was just telling Jeff before you got here, is that we are really pop songwriters.
Yeah.
We really are. We embrace a lot of world elements, but at the core of who we are, we're pop songwriters. Nobody ran off to India to play classical sitar and delve into that.
Oh, man.
We're pop songwriters, and we embrace a lot of other elements, and we bring that in, as well as electronica and all the others. And that's what we did here.
Well, I noticed that on this album especially, the synth work is just amazing, and the colors that you're using. But we were talking also before the show, I was talking to Jim. You guys and this group of people that you've known, Eric and Dan and all those guys.
Dan Sisto, sure.
You guys have changed what I call gut string. And the reason I say that, because there's more than one style. It's not just flamenco. It's not just classical. But you guys, with your influences, rock music influences, have changed the genre. And it's a very viable and a very growing market of technique of playing. But the roots of it is from a rock roots instead of just a classical, like 30 years ago, everything was, you know, basically everybody was listening to Segovia and they were playing all that stuff. You guys have totally changed the genre in a sense.
Well, you know, even earlier there was groups like PFM from Italy and groups that were touching on that, you know, in the 70s.
Well,
not to the degree that
progressive rock
now,
bands
had
a classical influence. Steve Howe.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was taking a traditional, but he would throw in his little stuff that he was doing, like some of the
his hillbilly country licks. That was that's what I love about Yes, that he did that stuff. But I also think, like I was telling somebody the other day, I said, you know, if you think about the nylon string guitar, or as you call it, the gut string guitar, it really wasn't, if you go back to the origin, I mean, it wasn't an instrument that you would normally see in the same room with a drum set. It's technology that made it possible.
Absolutely.
The fact that you can plug it in and amplify it. So I was telling a fan the other day, saying, you know, we're really just playing electric guitars that sound like nylon strings, but you know, they've got a pickup in it, they've got a cutaway, you know, we're playing with a rock attitude, and now we're using electric guitars a lot live, and we're using lots of synthesizers, but you know, at its core, the marriage we're making with all these different musical elements, a lot of it is because technology allows it. Because if you sat JP and I in a room with a couple nylon string guitars, no microphones, and had Tim on the drums, it wouldn't work. I think we needed to embrace the technology, as we talked about. Yeah. It's embracing the technology and using it in such a way that at the end of the day, it's all about a melody. You could dress it up however you want. I always say, that was what I was coming from with the record. I said, if we write a good melody, then we can dress it up however we want. But if the melody's bad, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
and I would say that's what we've done with all our CDs. All of us are really conscientious of writing a good melody, and we have been from the
beginning. They're very melodic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm going to actually play a piece I think you wrote, Rumba Poderosa.
Rumba Poderosa.
And this kind of explains a little bit of them experimenting with different instruments for colors. I noticed in the song, besides the traditional classical guitar, he's using electric guitar. He's using this. He asked me to bring this down. And also the synth. So I'm going to play this. And this gives you a feel of where they're going and what they're doing with this album, which is amazing. And also, too, notice the recording. It's very clean, and there's a lot of air, a lot of room in the mix. So here we go. Rumba Poderosa. I think that's a good demonstration of just the different types of colors and what you're doing in the songs. They're much more orchestrated, even though you're using a lot of guitars, but it's orchestrated. Everything comes in, things come in, come out. And that's interesting. I love the twang out of that. And that was a plug-in, right?
It was a Motu guitar plug-in, using their guitar room and all that. A lot of the electrics on this album were in the box. There are one or two that weren't. We'll get to those.
But obviously played on a real guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a synthesizer.
No. But I mean, that sound that he got, that's a pretty
super it was Vox, like an AC-30 sound, played around with the room distance and all that.
And that was something that was really deliberate. We really wanted to, like, and we do it live now. We do almost every, not every song, but there's always one of us playing nylon and the other playing electric.
Yeah,
so like on that song, I played the nylon string and he played the electric, and you have that kind of spaghetti western twang guitar against the nylon string, which, you know.
And it's so fun, you know, and people love it live too. It's just a great.
How do you do all
color.
The keyboards?
You know, we just
live. You mean
the, Oh, we break them down to a track and put them in a sequencer, run a separate track to Tim, and he does it. And it's so funny because I was tearing my hair out over the last 6 months to find out how to do this. And once I kind of started, and I'm like, this is the direction to go, I found all these videos that explained everything. It was and it was good because on the one hand, it indicated, okay, we're going in the right direction. On the other hand, oh my gosh, I wish I'd seen this 6 months ago. Because the thing was always, a lot of people are running stuff off the iPhone. They're running one channel mono to the house and another channel with a click. And we definitely wanted stereo and spatialization in the tracks. So that requires you to have a separate thing. We try to run that off a phone, and it's just not quite there yet. So manufacturers get on it. There are kind of workarounds, but doing it the way we're doing it now, using a digital performer, I'm sure you could use Pro Tools or whatever. But the other part of the synthesizers was we're big Spectrasonics, all of us are big Omnisphere fans, have been for years of the whole Spectrasonic suites,
doing a lot of demos on Stylus,
Trillion, a lot of Keyscape on this album. So all four of their main things are used quite a bit here. Rob Papin synths and some definitely Motu MX4. And the only other thing I can say about that is that because we are not keyboardists, usually hear something, especially from a long-term keyboardist, they're like, well, I've got my FM sounds and I've got my D50s and I've got all these things of the last 30 years of sounds or PPG or whatever. I tend to not like fluty sounds, and I tend to not like DX7 or FM synthesis kind of sounds, and love, I listen to George Duke or something really old, and it's fat, like a Jan Hammer, and that sounds correct. So we will tend to lean. Yeah, there he is. Wearing his
Moog.
Shirt. The Moog. And you have a different one, though. You have something.
I have an ARP.
The ARP, right.
I have an ARP.
And so we tend to lean towards some of those, use those sounds as colors, as opposed to something that maybe sounds a little more 80s. It's really interesting because the 80s have kind of come back, and you've got bands that are going, hey, Depeche Mode, I love. They did this, and or Duran Duran did this. And that relies on a certain body of synths. And I didn't listen or like those bands, so I won't tend to contribute some of those tones. Lisa is broader in some of her tastes, and will pull out some different scents like that. I think Jim is probably a little closer to the things I like in some of those flavors, because some of the flavors that he had on the demos we brought over to the songs, in Ruma Poderosa and High Tide.
I just work my way through things until I find something I like. I have some go-to things, but a lot of times I just go, mm-hmm. I don't like this, I don't like that, and I just keep going through, and then it's like, yeah, that fits.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about days. I've seen it 3 hours later. You're still working on the part. Yeah, I just haven't found the right sound.
No, it's like that.
Absolutely like that if you're trying to look for something that you haven't heard before. So.
No, I noticed, too, a lot of the synth stuff, I've said this before, and I think I've told you this years ago, was the one of the cool things about New Age music is there was a lot happening when it first came out with Windham Hill and stuff like that. There was some really happening synth stuff. People were really
absolutely
doing cool pads and atmospheres. And a lot of what you do has that feel to it, a lot more than just the blatant, jump, Van Halen, which is just basically a sawtooth.
It's an Oberheim.
Yeah. So, but you're getting these subtle, the very that synth that was on this last one, it's a very subtle type of a percussive type of sound,
mm-hmm.
almost like a plucked sound,
almost like some
quite
Michael Oldfield and Tangerine Dream textures,
arpeggiations.
But it works and it blends in, and the overall mix when you hear this in headphones or on a good stereo system, you can hear there's a lot of room and a lot of air. The mix is amazing.
We really worked at the mix. I mean, we always really work at the mix, and we always work to better the next mix. But we brought in another guy that we had worked with.
Tim Sonnefeld.
And he just really helped us a lot, do things that we had never done before. And he just really, really tightened it up and did that thing where each thing can really speak out.
And
it was great.
And this is a good time to say, too. I mean, as I said, Tim's sound is so amazing. He's an endorser of Ty. Did I say it right? Ty drums?
Yeah. Yep, Ty drums.
Ty drums.
Spelled T-A-Y-E.
There we go. and we had done some things with him before, and he always sounded great. He's like, the drum tone could maybe be a little better maybe on the album. Why don't you try this? And so Tim allowed us the mechanism to push it to the next level, which is using compression correctly, bussing everything out a bunch of ways, treating the toms in a certain way. So it was an extension of things we'd done before. There was nothing that was a shock, but the formal way of really getting it locked in was really a big leap for us.
There was an interesting, I don't remember which cut it is, but there's a sound you're getting out of like your snare, and it sounds just like the Police. And it's a very ambient sound.
I'll take that. It's my Stuart Copeland influence.
And no, but it had that. There's a lot of different sounds. As you listen to the album, the snare sounds different on different songs.
Well,
that's something
that I was just sitting here thinking about, as talking about the process and everything. Playing this music live, I'm finding a lot of different challenges in that. I feel like I can't just get by with one snare drum now for our life.
I hear you.
And it's something we're going to have to probably address at some point. I think there's some fantastic, triggering options and things like that that we could go into. So
don't even go there with me, my friend. We didn't bring this up, but now that you brought it up, everybody needs to go watch Jason Bonham play with Sammy Hagar on Howard Stern's show.
I saw that.
He played the newest Roland SP, the wine-colored thing.
Oh, they're amazing.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Like what the things. And, right. I'm going to have to talk to Tim when everything's really nice and good and see if there's any chance. So you just opened the floodgates, brother. Yeah. That's great.
In the studio, I used I think three different snare drums.
The main Steve Jordan, right, that you usually
use? Yeah, the Yamaha Steve Jordan signature.
Oh, my God, what a great snare.
Used a DW Craviato drum, and also a Yamaha Piccolo, a 4-inch, 4x14 Piccolo. And that might be the one that might be that sound.
Bruford was doing that, too, where he would have samples, and then he would use the snare when he would do his traditional stuff,
right.
But he would
get
that sample of that one snare that just hit you in the face,
right.
And he would just, it was great.
And a big shout out to Billy Sullivan where we recorded the drums.
Yeah,
he just did such a great job for us, and then we brought everything back into our studio and did everything else there.
Was it open? Did he pull the mics back, or were you pretty close mic?
He had everything close mic'd and also and some really
room.
Nice
so
mics.
You were playing with the room. That's the room.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now let me ask you this, and then I'm gonna play the next clip. I'm gonna play is the orchestration one,
Morning
in Maui. And what I wanted to ask you is, you guys are Motu. I presume that studio was Pro Tools. Brian Langsbard, who did the orchestrations for you, is Logic. How did you handle that? Because that's when you start importing stuff into different programs, was there any problems?
No, it's just all WAV files.
It's all WAV files, and it's all just doing the homework. We'll give somebody, we started at measure this, it needs to be that. And everything was different. Like for Billy, we know we're going to get raw drum tracks, so we know they need to start at this BPM. So as long as you do your homework, there's this BPM, 2496, and just do your pre-production homework, it's fine. With Brian, he wanted to give us the image of how the whole thing sounded in the stereo already. So when he gave us the first track, it was like, wow, this is really great. Push this up, and it's done. So he understands, what it's supposed to sound like, and he was matching to guitars that we had already recorded. So in that case, it was just getting a track that he had already,
So he just sent you waves.
Yeah, there was not a lot of collaboration in terms of, this oboe. Lisa had written the...
I did a basic orchestration that I wanted.
That had a lot of the parts that were in there.
Yeah, had a lot of the parts. When we did Ledges Road, and it's a very popular song of ours, I just orchestrated it for viola and cello, and we just really loved that. So with Morning in Maui, we want to go to the next step. So I orchestrated it more, and we're like, let's get Brian. That's all Brian does is orchestration. So
and he fleshed it out so beautifully.
And he, I think we sent him all separate parts too, so he could kind of bring them in and out and change and do what he wanted.
Yeah.
Well, let me play the clip so that people hear what he did. And this is, again, I'm just playing little snippets. The songs are much more evolved and they develop. But you get an idea of what he's doing on there, because I love what he does with the strings, and he does like low horns, which is
great.
A really cool sound. Here you go, Morning in Maui.
Mm-hmm.
those swells where he's doing there. He's got the strings, and then he has horns. There's horns in there.
And he's got them in the kind of correct stereo field.
Yeah, he can hear the English horn way in the corner in the back. He has the depth.
It's interesting when I heard it. It's like, because I love the Carpenters and some of the orchestrations. I was like, that's kind of like the Carpenters would do on this one song.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. We're huge Carpenters fans. So it's bringing it all in. And I would be remiss in not saying that in my formative years of high school, as many of you probably know, I've known Jeff for a very long time. It's one thing if he's introducing me to like Lou Reed, Rock and Roll, Animal, or Tower of Power, all of which he introduced me to. But I'm listening to all this stuff and rocking out. He's like, you should really check out Ralph Vaughan Williams. I'm like, what? What? So it all, in a sense, it really has all come full circle. So.
Yeah. Well, and also, too, it's kind of a development, too, from your solo album, because you had some really cool string parts.
I'm spacing
on the name. I'm sorry.
Wait for the Spring.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So, but that it's that same type of thing where you have that bit. And who's playing guitar on this?
Both JP and I are.
Yeah, that's a great. It's one of the few. Ron was asking me. He thought he was trying to figure out who's playing what, and I said, "You do play a lot of guitar. People don't know that as much. That she is an accomplished. She studied guitar too. But that's a beautiful song. Very lyrical. I mean, the melody just really. A lot of soul in it.
We've been trying to figure out a way for the three of us to do it live. So,
yeah,
that's another one that's in the works.
How are your English horn chops?
I'll start working on it.
Well, you're just going to have to book venues where there's an orchestra there and just do it. You know, like the Moody Blues do. Let's take a look at. I'm going to change it up a little bit because there's so many different things that you guys are doing. This one's interesting. I'm going to play Limitless because you had written in your notes a disco feel, and it's funny. It brings back memories hearing you play the bass where you're doing the octave.
Oh, right.
You're doing that whole thing. But take a listen to this, and there's some cool stuff, and I have the ending where the guitar goes nuts, and we'll talk about that. Again, it's a whole different feel, but it's kind of cool. It's still Incendio, but it's like beyond it. So here's Limitless. That was fun.
fun little jam.
What are you using on that? Tell me what you're doing there.
We did our standard guitar approach. Lisa played bass, he's just the groove monster here. Tim, just killing it. And then, very truthfully, we think, disco and Studio 54 and a lot of our dear friends in the LGBTQ community, I was thinking all those things and the celebration and all of that kind of came to bear. And what I never hear in any of that kind of disco stuff is a blues solo. And it absolutely came at the last. It was one of the last things we thought of was like, how can we undermine this even further and really, really screw it up? And something else you turned me on to, and we talked about a very long time ago, which is now more popular, small amps. And that's the PowerSonic, the Custom Craft 1966 PowerSonic 2 6V6s and the Strat. And I think it's blown out. I don't even think there's a distortion pedal on it. That's also part of the larger thing of going for older tones and all that. I mean, we're in the shred community. I'd say Jim is pretty firmly in the shred community. He has the chops to do it, the tone, the approach. He knows how to do that and does it live and does it on different albums. But the other part of it is to come from a different perspective and not just have ability to do that, but have the ability to put in a blues solo or put in a more Cajun-y country solo or put in all these different things. So once again, the blues thing was almost kind of undercutting the disco. So it's like, okay, let's do that because that's so weird. Let's try that.
And I totally got that. That was like, this is cool.
It's reversing
yourself. Because I know what he's saying. You know, you're, which is fun. It was kind of fun to hear, especially your bass playing was superb. But it was like,
so worked, the blues over there.
Yeah, it just worked. But it's like, what? You got to rock it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the snare, it's an interesting sound. What snare were you using on that?
That's the Jordan. The Steve Jordan signature.
Okay, did he process that? Was there any process? Because it's kind of an interesting sound. It's got like a real mid-range.
No, the one thing I would say that we played with a little bit, we didn't play too much with the EQ, but we did play a lot with the pre-delay on this so that, you know, it doesn't just come out into a wash of reverb. There's a little bit of a hit and then whoosh like that. So that's pretty much his tone and the consistency of his hit. That's really the thing. When you're going to pocket, it's got to be the same hit, but still have character, you know, still be able to speak and be dynamic.
I'm going to play now Blue Bolero, which you told me about the piano part. Now, did you program that or you actually played that?
I do good MIDI piano. So I played it and then I just tweak it a little bit. It's not a fast, you know, part.
JP's playing down his piano playing. He's a really good piano player. He really is.
I mean, I hear the piano and I just picture for a moment JP in a Ramada Inn in Schenectady, New York.
It still may work out.
one of the early gigs that we did, he came before he was even in the band, when I was just playing with Jim. He came waltzing in with a brandy glass and sat down at a grand piano someplace.
It was at a hotel in Beverly Hills.
And just started playing along with us.
We were doing concerto, and I was B minor. This is great.
It's funny.
I did okay.
No.
Right.
It just reminds me in the Blues Brothers when they go to the Ramada Inn with the little candles, and there's like two people there, and they're just playing up a storm, and there's like, it's just...
Again, that is what I'm shooting for.
But anyway, this one... give me a little more back. So there's some interesting synth parts in here too. You're doing the guitars on this one. This is your tune, right?
This is a song I wrote, and we were talking about, like, you know, different studios and stuff. What I did with this one is I mocked it up at my studio using stylus for the drum groove, which actually, when the song kind of gets going, I don't think it's the same stylus groove, but they kind of use that same kind of thing. But yeah, I think I pretty much play all the nylon string melodic stuff on this, and JP does some like call and response stuff to it, and then the piano is him. But yeah, this is one I wrote in my studio, and then just I think we transferred it over to you guys or Dropboxed it, and then they went crazy with it.
Yeah, it was an open palette to really put it in a more Spanish place. And another interesting thing is that there is a snare figure that is kind of delayed or something like that. So Tim is doing the straight ahead drums, and that is balanced against the snare loop that's happening from stylus.
Oh, okay.
So there was a lot of that in this album too, is balancing those two things so that they were complementary, and thankfully he did a great job with it.
All right, let's take a listen. This is Blue Bolero. piano comping is really cool. You're doing little things in and around it. That was really cool. And then there's a synth thing that goes blum, 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 blum. That's tricky to get those echoes to work because it's not on the beat.
And idiomatically, what those guys did with and Tim, everything, like when I sent the song and then I heard that, all the, those idiomatic kind of things, it's just so perfect for what I was hoping would happen. It was just like it had that blooming kind of otherworldly sound, you know, with that E minor six kind of tonality.
Yeah, that six is
so, it's just so and, it just worked out great.
And wouldn't have happened without Jim writing the song and just playing beautifully through the whole album. If you listen to Jim's always had great chops and we will play his ass off, but I think we all really honed in on really beautiful melodic playing, and his solo there is just so great in terms
yes.
of. And I wanted to ask you, because I don't actually remember what you used on the majority of the album. Do you, if you remember?
Actually, the whole album, I played my 2014 Jorge de Sofia.
The JDZ.
And okay. The reason being, because I have a couple GVRs, which I adore, but at the time, they weren't set up. The action was a little high. There were just little things that subsequently that I fixed. But also with the JDZ, it's a Florentine cutaway with an extended fretboard. So the fretboard goes longer than most nylon strings. It actually juts out over the sound hole, and it allowed me to get really high up and stay in tune. Because that's what happens a lot with nylon string guitars. When you start going above the 12th fret, it starts to get a little wonky tuning wise. And that guitar, just for whatever reason, it's real stable all the way up.
Boom. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not as loud as my other guitars, but it's with that Florentine cutaway, and I can get really high up. And I just used it the whole record.
Now, are you miking that guitar? Or
no, it's mic'd. We don't do any
No direct.
No. I mean, we use lots of electric guitars, and that's. But when we record acoustic guitars, it's always a mic.
Yeah, no, that guitar is a beautiful sounding guitar.
And I do want to say one interesting thing for people listening and hearing. I haven't heard this in a while in the acoustics, and you can hear Jim. I'm pretty sure I may be wrong, but I think Jim's guitar is in stereo, and I think mine.
You recorded in stereo,
But mine is in mono. And so you go, okay, well, don't you want everything in stereo? And you go, well, no, because you have this beautiful wide field at Jim, and then it comes back to me, and it's central, and it shifts the tone. You don't know why it sounds different, but it does. And my guitar is still airy and stuff like that. So it draws in the air and goes, there's been a subtle change, even though it's also a nylon string.
I notice it on that song, and I also notice it on High Tide because we alternate the melodies. Like, because my guitar is Brazilian rosewood and is a spruce top, and yours, I think, was a spruce top with cypress. Mm-hmm. You can hear, even though obviously we stylistically play different, there's a tonal difference to the guitars. And I'm like, it's really cool. You can hear the difference in tone. Like, if you really listen, you can say, my guitar has a little kind of a wider mid range. And yours is a little more toppy, but it's,
And that shift draws in the ear as opposed to, okay, I got to try to match Jim's tone or Jim's got to try to match my tone. It's that marked difference that allows you to move to a different part. Yeah. And wow, there's something really different. What did they do? Stereo to mono. Besides the two guitars and clearly two different approaches, there's also that. So
but
using
I,
that to
I assume
advantage.
Also, too, a lot of the guitars, like the rhythm guitar, that's mono, right? It's pushed to the
almost
side.
Every one thing we almost always do is dual mono. This might be single. This might be single mono.
Because in general, when you do this big stereo spread, that's what helps give that big sound. And you can hear a difference when people don't do that big spread. It just sounds much smaller.
I would double like a rhythm guitar in recording and then pan them.
Yes.
Hard left, hard right.
It.
And then you don't have to turn them up as much and you hear them.
When we do like a super strummy thing, it's usually dual mono. With the density of this particular album, some parts were consciously left in mono because like, there's so much going on.
Right.
You don't have to do stereo.
Right. Well, all right. I got to play this one. This one I really like a lot. This is fun. We were playing it in the car and Ron was like, are those sampled or are those real brass? I go, that's real brass. There's no way you could do that with samples, especially the phrasing. This is called Don't Pretend. And I'll let you explain this after I play it. But check this out. And there's an interesting guitar lead at the end on this one, too. So here we go. Don't Pretend.
Don't
Great drum breaks.
Thank you.
That is just awesome.
She just kills it.
And that was all written out, right? You had to write. You had to read that, right, to get all that?
No. That was, I don't know. I went through it. I went through it a few times. You know, there were a few versions of that. I think that we.
Yeah, the breaks were written, but he came up with.
Oh yeah, the breaks were written, but the stuff.
You had. I think you had the horn chart.
Fills.
I think you read. We're reading the horn chart.
Yeah,
and you knew what the horns were going to do, and you knew where the hits were, and you were like, okay, so
those were his ideas.
Yeah, that was all him.
No, it worked perfectly, but those breaks, man, and then you at the end, you're doubling up on the guitar.
Yeah.
So what were you using on that one?
That was my May 69 Marshall Super Lead 100 watt. Thank you, Tawny Handel. With the Warmoth Strat, with Klon Centaur that I bought from Joe Bonamassa. He had one and was like, and he had mislabeled the price. I'm like, oh, it's that much. Okay. Today I'm a man. I'm going to buy this. And so we had the Klon Centaur going. And then I have a very, very dear friend who made me the gift of a Dan Electro Chicken Salad, who's a $25 pedal. And you may know who that was. It was you. So Jeff gave me a $25. You cannot get this pedal now. You can't find it because it was moddable. And people are doing mods to them.
They were selling for like $30.
Yeah.
Nobody them, and they're basically a Univibe.
Yeah.
It was a Univibe, and it's
and now you now you can't get them. And so I Lisa, God bless her, she must have worked with me for like 3 or 4 hours, just different amp combinations, the Made in Mexico Strat, all this kind of stuff, and then we came up with that combination. And after that, then it was 45 minutes. Of just sweating. I have it all on video, and it is little pieces, and they all sound good, but they weren't that solo. It's like getting that took a really, really long time. And then I wanted the feedback goes all the way to the end. We brought it back, and I was just sitting there. I know she's in the control, goes, wow, he really caught it there, because it was just like, and then we fielded it back up.
There was a bunch of takes till we got that perfect one that just sang.
Yeah,
because
it's all the positioning of the amp and all this other stuff, and you can't.
Well, it's feedbacking in and it's going a harmonic up.
Yeah.
And that's hard to, once you can get that sweet spot and the
Strat. That's exactly. It was like, because then you do the solo and then you have to move. And then even if you move, it doesn't catch. So it caught, you know.
It's not easy. I usually get it with a wah to just boost the high end.
Yeah.
But that's perfect. It just got, it just took off.
That's what we're looking for.
But it was an interesting way you used the chicken salad. I didn't notice it as like a Univibe type thing. You had it a little faster.
Mm-hmm. And now when we do the song live, Jim actually takes a solo and just, man, just plays the heck out of it. So come on down to check out those shows, like July 6th coming up here.
Well, actually, first of all, incendioband.com is the website. Check out this stuff. And we're almost out of time. And there's about 2 minutes in the Dog Mountain, which is going to take us out. Here's the album again. Some of the moves. It's available everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can get it.
Ask for it.
Yes. And
and streaming. Everywhere. Spotify.
Yeah, and you guys. Pandora. How's this doing on Spotify? Are you getting a lot of action on it now?
You know what? I was just talking to Lisa. It's been added to a ton of playlists. Like at least 15 curated playlists in about a week, which is hard to get on those lists. And Pandora, it's doing well on Pandora. A lot of times, a lot of these streaming services, it takes a while for them to get seated. And this one seems to be getting good traction. I think it's such an eclectic release because, you know, you have the last song, Don't Pretend, on the same album that you have Morning in Maui. So you have this orchestrated nylon string on the same album. You have like this almost quasi-Santana R&B song. The streaming world we live in now allows it. Yeah. We can be really crazy with our influences.
Absolutely.
And it's actually liberating because you can have on the same record songs that maybe in the past the label executive would say, you can't have that on the same album as this. It's too different. People don't buy records more. They buy songs.
Yeah. Well,
so they'll go, I like that song a lot. So they'll add that or they'll favorite it or whatever. So, but it gives us a chance to really stretch out. So.
But also because the influence of the record labels it's gone, you can do what you want.
Yeah.
And this would never be allowed by an A&R guy. It's like, well, wait a minute.
They would say, can you do more like the second song, like do a whole album of the second song, or you know, what? Why is the last song, Amazon River Hoedown, on there?
Yeah.
You know, because we can, and you know what? People can download it or not.
Yeah. And people like it. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. All right, what I'm going to do real quick is give a dates. You guys are playing a lot. You guys are working a lot.
We're going to be at this coming Saturday at Culver City as a guitar trio at Boulevard Music. Then Spaghettini full quartet show on 622 Boulevard Music, 629 Saturday at Spaghettini, which is almost sold out in Seal Beach. Then Saturday, July 6th, we are at NoHo, not far from here, North Hollywood Summer Concerts near the Amelia Earhart Library. Then right after that in succession, we have a summer show in Glendale. We are going to have a summer show in Pomona in August, and then 2 weeks in the East Coast. All the information there is at incendioband.com, including shows at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., the Mock Chunk Opera House, which we love going out there, to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
And we'll be in Chicago as well.
We'll be at least two shows in Chicago, Chicago Botanic Garden, mm-hmm. Deerfield Summer Concerts, and then
we'll be in Colorado.
Wisconsin, the studio with great studio winery. In Lake Geneva, and then Stevens Point up north of Madison, then back to two shows in Colorado and Monument in Colorado Springs, and Pine Mountain Guitar Festival. All a bunch of stuff coming up.
So incendioband.com, you can hear, and they're also on Facebook. They post a lot where what they're doing, so you can keep track of what's happening and see them when they come to your town. Thank you guys for coming on. This is a great album. I really hope this gets nominated, because this is a well-engineered album. This is really extraordinary.
Thank you.
Besides the music, too.
And a big shout-out to Michael Page for doing our artwork, too. He's the one that branded us and did six of our CDs, and he came back and did this one, too. It's just amazing.
Yeah, this is a great cover, and I used it for the promo card for the... It's a great...
It looks like we're coming out of the Stardate or something.
Yeah. this is really, really good. But I thank you, and I really think this album is... Check it out. It's really interesting what they're doing. There's a lot of cool things you can learn in terms of subtlety and arrangement and the parts and tone. You guys really have it down, and even down to the snares. Those are great. And it's just a great album. We don't have time to play the Hoedown, which I wanted to play, but you'll have to go buy the album and check that out. We're going to play Dog Mountain real quick. There's a bunch of interesting guitars on this one. You're using, if I'm correct, the Mexican Strat.
Mexican Strat, the Reverend Telly, very consciously trying to emulate kind of the wall of chugging guitars that were on Won't Back Down by Tom Petty, which is also not the first thing you think of when you do Spanish guitar. So there's another influence of bringing that to bear, of staying relatively sparse. So a lot of electric, a lot of different stuff on that.
And then you're using that, you're in a plugin, right? Amplitude?
Yeah, this is Amplitude.
And then you're using this acoustic guitar is great. I heard this. I'm like, what is this? It's a 65 Gibson.
The 65.
I've never heard of a Country Western.
I think it was their least expensive model. It's a Country Western. And then I think the other really beautiful part is Jim just did some very simple, beautiful arpeggios in the second chorus. There's all sorts of different parts that are popping up.
Yeah, it's
everywhere.
Really a beautiful, just a really cool song. So anyway, take a listen to this. It's really good. Get this album, Summoning the Muse. It's really great. Love you guys. Thank you for coming down.
Thank
it's just
you.
Always
Thank
good
you.
To have you here. And in the fall, we'll probably try to drag Jim in with Eric later, hopefully, if I can get a date locked. So, and anyway, here is Dog Mountain. Thank you guys. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.